Hello and welcome to the Hidden History of Texas, episode 46, Frontier Forts, 1850-1856. This is actually the second part of our look at the Frontier Forts. I'm your host and guide, Hank Wilson, and as always, brought to you by Ashby, Navis, and Tennyson Media Publishers, producers of a comprehensive catalog of audiobooks and high-quality games, productivity, and mental health apps. Visit AshbyNavis.com for more information. Okay, following the death of Major General George Mercer Brooke in 1851, his successor, Brevet Major General Percival F. Smith, added Forts Ewell and Merrill in South Texas, pushing the military line further west. Smith also authorized constructions of Fort Clark, Terrett, and Mason, McCavitt, Chadburn, Phantom Hill, and Belknap. This was all to help plug gaps in the northwest. Camp Cooper was erected in 1856. A double line of forts now protected Texas' southern and western frontiers. So, let's take a look at four of those forts. I'm going to start with Fort Belknap. Fort Belknap was established at the site of what is now Newcastle in Young County, Texas. Newcastle is located in what is known as North Central Texas and is very near the headwaters of the Brazos River. In June of 1851, Brigadier General William Belknap established a fort in the area because there was adequate water. The fort was what is known as a four-company post. There were members of the 2nd Unit of the U.S. Dragoons, the 7th U.S. Infantry, the 2nd U.S. Cavalry, and the 6th U.S. Cavalry. Fort Belknap was the northern anchor of the Central Texas chain of forts, which had been established to protect the Texas frontier from the Red River to the Rio Grande. It had no defensive walls or works, and the troops that inhabited it were used to pursue raiding bands from the various tribes that inhabited the area. At times, troops from the fort trailed their enemies into Kansas in order to do battle with their enemies, and one of the results of the fort's presence was the creation of a centralized hub of roads that made travel throughout the region easier. This included the Butterfield Overland Mail Route from St. Louis to San Francisco. At the start of the Civil War, troops were moved, and Union troops finally returned in April of 1867. Well, it was finally abandoned for good in September of 1867. Now, in the 1970s, the citizens restored and rebuilt some of the buildings, and today it is open to visitors. One other frontier fort that was opened in 1851 but did not receive the same care and consideration from latter generations was Fort Mason. Fort Mason was established in July of 1851 in Mason, Texas. Mason is one of the most picturesque towns in perhaps the most picturesque region of the state. It's about 60 miles from where I currently live. And while the town itself is well worth a visit, the remains of the fort, not so much. There's only one building left, and it's very disappointing if you're interested in Texas history. Now, Fort Martin Scott in Fredericksburg or Fort Croghan in Burnet are both much more informative and easier to visit. Anyway, Fort Mason was established in 1851 atop a hill that offered the soldiers an expansive view of the land around. Major Hamilton W. Merrill and Companies A and B of the 2nd Dragoons were the first soldiers to occupy the fort. There's no clear record of who the post was named after, and appears it was most likely named either for Lieutenant George T. Mason, who was killed at Brownsville during the Mexican War, or General Richard Barnes Mason, who died only a year before the fort was established. The fort was occupied on and off until 1861, at which time it was taken over by secessionist forces of Texas. A couple of notable officers who served at Fort Mason when it was in Union hands was Robert E. Lee and John Bell Hood, both of whom went on to become Confederate leaders. After the Civil War, the Union took control of the fort and was finally abandoned in 1869. One fort now that was never officially a fort, but is known locally as Phantom Hill, was established on November 14, 1851. Lieutenant Colonel John J. Abercrombie arrived at the Clear Fork of the Brazos in the area of present-day Jones County with five companies of the 5th Infantry. This was not where he had been ordered to build a fort. His orders called for him to build a second fort after Fort Belknap on Pecan Bayou at a site in what is now Coleman County. However, Smith, who was unfamiliar with the area, took it upon himself to change the locale to the Clear Creek Fort close to its junction with Elm Creek. While he thought it was the best place, in reality it wasn't. Other than Smith's personal whim, there was no reason for this decision. In fact, it affected the post's future. There was no adequate water supply and no nearby lumber. There's no timber, no trees, nothing. One of the officers, Lieutenant Clinton W. Lear, did write to his wife that while the valley was indeed beautiful and abundant with game, he felt that it was never intended, quote, for white men to occupy such a barren waste. Due to its poor location and shortage of anything that could be used to help build a frontier fort, especially a suitable frontier fort, it was only occupied until 1854. In fact, Fort Phantom Hill was never officially named. Military records usually refer to it as the post on Clear Fork of the Brazos. Now, about 150 miles west of Austin sits Menard, Texas. Now, for those of you not from Texas or familiar with it, that's really just a day trip. In fact, it's only about 99 miles from my house to Menard. It's a trip I've made several times. Menard is the home of Fort McCavitt. Well, okay, the fort is actually another 22 miles from Menard, so, but anyway, Fort McCavitt is one of the best maintained of the old frontier forts you're going to find. It is well worth the visit. The camp was originally founded as Camp San Saba. Now, there was another San Saba in McCullough County, which is now Brady, and there is a city called San Saba, which is nowhere near this Camp San Saba. But anyway, the camp occupied a little over 2,300 acres and sat close to the right bank of the San Saba River. Initially, there were several infantry companies stationed whose primary purpose was to protect settlers from raids by the Comanche. The Army abandoned the post in 1859, but in 1868, after the Civil War, it was reoccupied and given the name of Fort McCavitt. It is recognized that the name was chosen to honor Captain Henry McCavitt, who was killed in the Battle of Monterey in 1846. There has been extensive work done at the site, and it's a great place for a walking tour and to visit the museum and bookstore. As I said, it is a great day trip. The frontier forts were an idea that looked good on paper. The Army laid out the posts in areas where theoretically there would be easy access to water, forage, and construction materials. The troops handled the construction themselves, so the cost of construction was minimal. And since the tribes very, very rarely attacked the forts, there was no need for the types of walls you see in the movies. If you get a chance to visit the forts, I think you'll find them an interesting stop. So that's going to do it for this episode. Now, next episode, I'm going to talk about something that might make folks a tad uncomfortable. And that's, what was the relationship between the Mexicans who lived in Texas and the newly arrived Americans who wanted land? I'm going to give you a hint. It wasn't always all that pretty. Please subscribe to the podcast. I'm back, and I'll keep posting new episodes. Sometimes, though, life gets in the way, which is why there was a gap between episodes. If you want more information on Texas history, visit the website at the Texas State Historical Association. I also have 4 audiobooks out on the hidden history of Texas. The Spanish Bump into Texas, that's 1530s to 1820s. Here Come the Anglos, 1820s to 1830s. Years of Revolution, 1830 to 1836, and A Failing Republic Becomes a State, 1836 to 1850. You can find the books pretty much wherever you download or listen to audiobooks. Just do a search for The Hidden History of Texas by Hank Wilson, and it'll pop right up. Or visit my website, That's on arctx.org. arctx.org. And by the way, like I said, if you like audiobooks, visit my publisher's website. There is an incredible selection of audiobooks there. In addition to mine, you're going to find the classics, horror, science fiction, mental health, and much, much more. Check it out. Visit ashbynavis.com. That's ashbynavis.com. Thanks for listening, y'all, and I'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye, and God bless.